Welcome on into the Intern Allen Show, episode 32. It is Saturday night, 10:15 p.m. Eastern time, that is, in my apartment in Miami. Watching second weekend games of Sweet 16 games. Wait, no, what is it right now? Oh, it's the Elite Eight right now. Of the NCAA tournament. UConn already booked their ticket to the Final Four earlier today. Now we're looking at Illinois lost to UConn. Now we're looking at Clemson, another orange team in Alabama. Currently very close. Just went to commercial break, so I don't actually know who's ahead right now. But we'll go through all the tournament, obviously. Update on Road to the Final Loon. It's looking pretty good for myself and Megs, and it's could only be the two of us. It's a spoiler alert, I guess. we'll look at the Wolves, who are rolling right now, and the Twins, who are low-key also rolling, but some concerning things, obviously, with the injury to Royce Lewis, but we'll get to that in time. Yeah, let's get started. Since the last pod, there's been a lot of tournament games. I recorded that the middle of the day on the 2nd. When did I record it? I recorded it on a Friday, maybe, of like the first round. And I called myself a first round merchant. I think that was when that was. A lot has happened. I'll just go over some of the basics. No, I was in the middle of Saturday. It was. Yeah, because we went over all the first round games, which took forever. Obviously, the big story here is UConn is just better than everybody, it seems, right? They mowed through Northwestern. It wasn't a game. It never really had a chance to be, really. Of all the one seeds that we're going to lose to an 8 or 9 seed in the second round, UConn was not one of them. They were leading at halftime 40-18. So, yeah, they're just kind of dominating. And then today rolled through, or they in between, by the way, they rolled through San Diego State, beat them by 30. And then today was kind of hanging around punch for punch with Illinois, and then went on a 30-0 run to close the first half. I don't know the last time a 30-0 run has happened in the NCAA tournament. And maybe it would happen in the NCAA tournament more often than in other basketball games. I feel like the Wolves blew like a couple 30 point, like two seasons ago when we made the playoffs, but we're still way too young. And we're still saying that Cat was the star, even though Anthony Edwards was clearly better. I feel like there was a couple 20s, like in the playoffs or the playoff push there, where there was like a 20-0 run that we lost the game or something like that. But a 30-0 run is crazy. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. I will say that, the team that I thought had the best chance to beat UConn was before, the final. So I think, obviously I picked Purdue to win the title, right? I didn't necessarily pick them because I think they match up better with UConn, because that game wasn't going to happen until the final. I picked them basically to have somebody to pick other than UConn, because I didn't want to pick what everybody else picked. But I was hoping that UConn would run into an Iowa State, would run into maybe have trouble with the San Diego State, maybe have trouble with Auburn, who never got there. And that they wouldn't just sort of steamroll to where it seems pretty clear right now that they are – I mean, they're definitely the clear favorite, I would say. At this point, it's almost surprising if they don't win the title. Which, as somebody who, I win a decent amount of bracket pools if Purdue wins the title, because my bracket is very good, and I have Purdue winning it all, right? So if that happens, I make a fair amount of money. as somebody who's, you know, essentially has a future on Purdue, if you will, I want UConn to lose at any time, even though I have them picked to go to the final, just because a lot of other guys have UConn, obviously. I thought Illinois might have been that team. Not necessarily because as a team they're all that great, because I didn't have them going that deep because I was concerned about them kind of laying eggs every now and then. But if they have guys that can score the ball at a level that I thought could compete with UConn if they were on, and it kind of happened for a little bit, and then they completely fell apart the way I was kind of scared of it happening earlier in the tournament even. I didn't even have them in the Sweet 16, I don't think. I was stupid for that. But I thought Illinois might have been that team. We're absolutely not that team. I do not think either of the teams I'm watching right now in Alabama or Clemson is that team. Clemson just doesn't have the guys. They've had a really fun run right now. Number 24 does not, he like looks like a bench warmer. I mean, it's not just because he's white. It's partially because he's white. They got a couple. There's a lot of good white guys in this tournament, which a lot of people have talked about, but Clemson's got two of them. Joe Girard, and then this number 24 guy, something, Ben something. I might have made that up. Hall or something like that. They're both really good. Joe Girard looks like the white guy that can shoot really well. He just does. Like, that's, you know, an archetype of March Madness player that he looks like, and that's who he is. This number 24 Hall guy does not – he looks like a walk-on, like, manager to get the GPA up. Like, hair's just a little bit too long, a little too curly. He plays in the post and isn't big, but, like, eats down there. It's kind of crazy to watch. I picked Clemson to, I think, lose their first round game. So I've been, you know, I was cheering for them in an upset here and there just to see some chaos. But been cheering against Clemson plenty in this tournament because they've been, you know, going against teams that I picked. But and I'm like, there's no way this number 24 guy is any good. And then he's just, like, eating guys up. Anyway, they've been a fun little story. I guess that's all to say. I don't think either of these teams has a real chance to beat UConn. It'll be cool for Alabama, for that program to make a Final Four the way they probably should have last year. If they win this game, and obviously Clemson is sort of a out of nowhere story. Grant Nelson, North Dakota legend worth mentioning, had an incredible game. In the Sweet 16 to get here against North Carolina. Really was the best player on the court for the last 10 minutes of that game. He was the best player on the court the entire game, but was pretty clearly playing at a level above everybody else. North Carolina couldn't make anything also, but heard a couple of, you know, national podcasts talk about him and mustache white boy from North Dakota. So we're getting as a former mustache white boy from North Dakota, currently 5 o'clock shadow white boy from North Dakota myself, I appreciate the recognition on the national level. But he was really good in that game. It feels like they should win this game against Clemson. We'll see. That's the vibe I'm getting right now, but they're only up 3, I guess, or they're up 4. But we'll see. Let's see. Other big storylines is obviously NC State. They just keep winning. Now in the Elite Eight, playing Duke for the trip to the Final Four tomorrow. It's not just – I'd said it earlier when they, like, won one game or a couple games. I was like, okay, well, if they just don't call offensive fouls on DJ Burns, then everything, like,
nobody can really guard him. And it's kind of like the Zach Edey thing, which apparently everybody hates. But I'm going to sneeze. Didn't sneeze. But that's not even like what it was like in this most recent game. And obviously they beat Oakland. Like, Oakland beat Kentucky, right? And so then NC State having to beat a 14 seed that's even seeded a lot worse than them is like not an upset at all. And it obviously aids to their Cinderella run, quote unquote. But, you know, they beat like one team until they beat Marquette, obviously, last night. And they beat them handily. We're leading pretty much the entire game. They just, Marquette just kind of laid an egg. It wasn't even DJ Burns that did it. It just kind of everybody on NC State is playing at a bit of a kind of playing out of their minds. Marquette shot the ball really, really poorly, like really poorly from three, 12%, something like that. Which sometimes that just happens, like especially in college basketball, dudes just run out of talent that like you can talk about all year and then they just kind of don't have talent anymore. For like one game, they're not good. Like that doesn't really happen in the NBA because everybody's just the talent level is higher, like significantly higher anyway. But like dudes just kind of run out of talent. Or just shoot really badly. Like, the whole team will shoot badly and you're like, well, that sucks. Anyway. Huge storyline for me, obviously, is Purdue. I'm not by any means a like college basketball expert. I watch beginning of March, a couple weeks before the conference tournament start, and then I mean basically when football season ends is when I start watching college basketball more. I sort of watch the NBA at the same amount when football season's on and when it's not. I don't ever add or subtract NBA except for like during the tournament. I only watch college basketball. But then the amount of football I watch is just kind of replaced at least partially by the amount of college football or college basketball I watch. So that's all to say, like, I'm by no means an expert on the sport, right? But, and so I'd seen a Purdue game here and there and was obviously aware of the team and who they are, and I picked them to win the championship for a reason. But, like, watching them, when everybody, like, hates Purdue, right? They complain about how Zach Edey just gets fouled all the time just because he's big and how he's no talent, he's just tall. It's cheering for them when they're rolling and there's actually nothing the opponent can do is kind of awesome, and I kind of love it. I think I love Zach Edey. All he does is just like be big, get fouled, do little post hooks and make free throws, and then like nobody in the country can stop it. And then on defense, you won't get a layup against him. You won't get a dunk. Every now and then you will. If you can get him like out of the post, he's actually like horrible. He's like a horrible defender, but he just like won't leave the post, and he doesn't have to because it's not the NBA. By the way, I think like I could be totally making this up. This isn't like a I know ball take. So like I could be so wrong about this. I feel like one of the reasons why Zach Edey won't work in the NBA is that defensive 3 seconds is a thing in the NBA and it isn't in college, because like on the defensive end, he really can't do anything. Like he can't move his feet really at all. It's like watching a statue that like moves in slow motion and then just like gets fouled and makes post hooks and or block shots. Which that doesn't really work in the NBA because you can't just park under the paint or in the paint and under the basket. Anyway, I've kind of been loving Purdue, which I feel like most people don't love Purdue. I've also had Duke going to the Elite Eight and beating Houston, and so I've been loving Duke, which I feel a little bit like ISIS. Which, by the way, Houston, like, obviously would have won that game if their best player, and one of the best players in the country, in Jamal Shedd, was, like, actually healthy for the entire game. The fact that Duke ended up, like, winning a rock fight when they're at full strength and Houston is down their best player, you know, tells you all you need to know about how that game might have gone if everybody was healthy. But having picked Duke in that exact matchup, that specific game has put me in a very good position in a lot of bracket pools, because a lot of people had Houston at least going to the Final Four or going pretty far, maybe championship or winning it all, whatever. I had them bowing out in the Sweet 16. Got lucky, completely lucky, that Jamal Shedd was going to, or ended up getting hurt, because they were going to win that game pretty clearly until he did. Jared McCain did not play well, which that was, like, kind of the thing, is, like, we need Jared McCain to go, you know, score 30 points, hit, bang a bunch of threes if Duke's going to be able to hang in this game, and he didn't do that. He was very average. I think he had 7 points or something like that. Did post a TikTok after the dub. Nails were painted. That's my goat. Not actually. I mean, he seems cool. I don't know. Where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. I feel a little bit like ISIS, cheering for both Duke and Purdue over the past weekend. Yeah. Let me think. Let me just go over any other storylines. Gonzaga was fun. They looked really, really good in their Sweet 16 game against Kansas. But Purdue was better. Let me see. We're not Sweet 16. They're in their Round of 32 game against Kansas. Illinois was fun while they lasted. I haven't watched a lick of Creighton or Tennessee this entire tournament. It just happened that whenever those games were on, I didn't watch them. So, I don't actually have any day. I mean, Tennessee is advancing. Don't connect Wales, but, like, another North Dakota boy, by the way. Which, like, how are there so many North Dakota? I mean, maybe it's just the two of them. I think it's just the two of them. Also, I feel like I didn't know that Dalton Connect was from North Dakota. Like, I feel like, why wasn't that more, like, known? Anyway, I have some notes that I've taken at various points when watching the games the past week, so I'll go over those. Zags look real good. Nice. Utah State flopping a lot. I think that was way back in the second round game, Purdue against Utah State. It would have had to have been. That game wasn't close. And I watched every minute of it, like, in love with Zach Edey. I wrote, Edey owns the pay like no one else. I actually love Zach Edey. Uh-oh, Purdue looks nasty. I was all in. Baylor just laid a fucking egg. What the fuck? This was before we realized that Clemson was kind of good. This is just an electric note. Is Ray J. Dennis, who I believe is like a guard for Baylor, I think, right? Like, where's number 11? Light skin, I think that's that guy. I said, is Ray J. Dennis named after the Kim K. sex tape guy? Really valid question. Somebody answer. His name is not like Ray J. Like, his name is Ray J. Just like the rapper who banged Kim K on camera. If anybody knows the answer to that, let me know. Oh my gosh. There's some notes in here about the Alabama Gulf Coast game, or not Gulf Coast, Grand Canyon. I saw GC and I was like, GCU. Anyway, Grand Canyon University. Grand Canyon University is one of the most, like, unserious basketball teams I've ever seen in my entire life. I did not watch the game in which they beat whoever they were playing. the 5 seed. I don't remember who it was. I didn't watch the game. It was St. Mary's. It was my Gales. That's who it was. The Spiders. I did not watch that game, so I don't know how they won it, but like, they can't hold on to the basketball. They don't run any offense. They shoot early shot clock threes, miss them. They will, like, they would, I think they would go 1-on-6 into the paint if they could. Like, 1-on-5 fast break, I'm just head down, like, cradling the ball in my like, between my forearms and biceps as if it's like a fucking football. I'm just cradling it in there and then driving to the hole, and I'm getting fouled, and then I'm gonna miss the free throws. Like, that's what was happening over and over and over again. They were incredibly active on the defensive end with steals and blocks and stuff like that, and Grant Nelson was playing kind of shit, but Mark Spears, the guard for Alabama. Mark Price? No, that's a different... He played for the Cavs or something. Jesus Christ. What's his name? Mark Sears. Mark Spears is like a ESPN guy or something. Anyway. Mark Sears was pretty good. But everybody else was horrible. And also, like, DC was pretty decent in the... like, on the fast break, open court. That was, like, all their offense was. And then in the half court, like, their, like, literal only option was to give it to that one guy, number 11, I don't, something like that. Don't remember his name. And then he would just, like, take on the entire defense at once. And it was just, like, an incredibly inefficient way to play basketball. Yeah. So, like, I mean, that game was fun to watch, I guess, but it was also, like, what are we even watching? Like, this isn't even really basketball. I was okay with them losing, though, because of Goose Abneilson. Not a fan. Also, people are saying online that GCU is, like, a fake college. I don't really know what that means, but that, like, the education isn't worth anything that you get from there. I don't know. Again, me mentioning that on the pod has nothing to do with my vendetta against Goose Abneilson, but just thought I'd mention it. Let's see, anything else. I was going over the notes. I say, what if we just drove to the hoop recklessly every time with, like, 7 question marks? That's what they did. I have an issue. The quick two thing, it's got to stop. A team will be down 3 points with, like, 12 seconds left, and the announcer will be like, they can get a quick two. Why, though? Like, can they really get a quick two? There's no time. Like, just hit a three. Maybe it's just because college teams can't actually shoot threes, that nobody ever's like, we always have to get a quick two. This is one of those things that I talk about where it's like somebody who thought they were smart one time, like, started doing the quick two thing, and then everybody else who thinks they're smart has to also say it to prove that they're smart. At a certain point, it's just like the quick two thing is not real. Like, just shoot a three if you're down 3 points. It's just like you have to. And then, like, every announcer acts like they're reminding somebody of something they've never heard before. Hey, you guys, remember, you can get a quick two here. There's still time. You can get a quick two. Just like, we know you can get a quick two. We've watched basketball over the past 10 fucking years where you never shut the fuck up about getting a quick two. And then now, like, I have this note. I don't remember the game at all. It was A&M against Houston, I guess it was. Oh, yeah, that game was sick with the game winner. Or in the game tie, the big game tie. They, like, tried to get a quick two in that situation, or they were suggested to try to get a quick two in that situation when you need 3 points to tie the game. It's like when you get it down, and they were down, like, a bunch with, like, not much time left in that game, and they got it back to the point where it was one possession, and then we're still trying to go to get it to quick two? No, you've got it to one possession. You go get the one possession. The way they did, But the announcers were like, oh, quick two here is a good idea. I'm like, no, it's fucking not. The quick two is not always a good idea just because you sound smart when you say it or you think you do. Anyway, that's the quick two rant. That game was very fun. I wish Houston lost it because, as I mentioned before, didn't have Houston going very far. But they lost eventually to Duke, so that was kind of fire. But, yeah, the inbounds play was sick to tie that up, and then it was pretty clear they were outmatched in overtime. But, oh, well. That walk-on that shot that free throw was awesome, too. Again, I was hoping he missed, but, you know, it was pretty awesome. Yeah. I also have the note, women's tournament is low-key nice. I watched, like, one women's tournament game, and it was low-key nice. It was Caitlin Clark against, I don't even remember who she played, in West Virginia? Yeah, that was right. Close one. I'm going to check in on the women's tournament right now, see what's going on. What do we got cooking? Is Caitlin Clark still in it? Yeah, they beat Iowa today to go to the Elite Eight. Or they beat Colorado, sorry, I'm dumb as hell. So the Elite Eight is South Carolina, Oregon State, Mississippi State, Texas, LSU, and Iowa. Oh, wait, that's like the one that everybody wants to see. Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. And then UConn, USC, that's kind of fire. See, I'm telling you, the women's tournament's kind of fire. All right. Let's talk about the games coming up for the men's tournament. Alabama's going to win this game. It looks like they're up 9 with about 6 minutes left right now. Which, having that result for that program feels like kind of a big deal. I don't think they've been to the Final Four very recently at all that I can remember. And even though they're going to get railroaded and killed by UConn because they don't play defense as well as they will need to against UConn, they haven't been bad defensively this tournament, actually. But UConn is just a bit far more of a well-oiled machine than they are. So they're winning that, I would think. Tennessee and Purdue tomorrow. Obviously a huge matchup for me. Need Purdue to win the title, so need them to make the Final Four first. I just don't think, I mean, Dalton Connect would have to go for like 35, which I guess he can. I guess that's very much in the cards, but I just don't necessarily see the numbers of people. Excuse me. The type of players you need to match up with Zaki, do you either need one really good, really big defender, or you need like three of them that are not as big, so then they can sort of soak up the fouls and not get in foul trouble. I don't necessarily see Tennessee as having that. UConn, by the way, does have that in Klingon, so I'm a little worried. But I'm actually very worried that UConn is just going to... Like, my bracket... Okay, well, let's just get to the road to the Final Loon. My bracket is very good right now. I'm, like, top million in the world, which, you know, seems like not that much. But I'm in the top, like, 4% of all brackets, right? Had due to the Elite Eight. Had Purdue making this run. Wasn't scared of them, blah, blah, blah. None of it's going to matter, and I'm not going to make any fucking money. If UConn wins the title, which is, like, by far the most likely thing to happen right now. So, my Midwest region, like, knock on wood, is literally perfect. Like down to the every... Like, I got every first-round matchup. And then I got every round of 32 matchup correct. Then I got Creighton losing to Tennessee, and I got Purdue beating Gonzaga. And I have Purdue beating Tennessee to get a perfect region. in the Midwest region. So like that's been great. The other regions, you know, they're all right, but not quite as much. But if Purdue beats Tennessee tomorrow, I'm knocking on wood, then that's a perfect region for the kid, which I don't, you know, it's kind of fun. And again, none of it matters if UConn wins the tournament, because then in the Loon HQ, in the road to the final Loon bracket, I will lose to Loon Mags, and in every other bracket pool, I'll lose to somebody. So whatever. Let's go through it though. Road to the final Loon. I'm currently winning 710 points. Top 4% in the world. With a max possible of 1430. As I mentioned, perfect bracket Midwest so far. Had North Carolina in the Final Four, so that loss to Alabama definitely hurt. UConn in the Final Four, it helps, but I need them to lose or else it won't matter, as I mentioned. Had Duke beating Houston, had Marquette beating NC State. And then losing, no, I had Marquette losing to Kentucky, so that's that region where Kentucky, I picked Kentucky, and they were a mess. Anyway, that's that. All in all, bracket's pretty solid. I've stayed in it remarkably long. Usually I feel like at least by the end of the first weekend, I feel like it's busted, or at least Sweet 16 something, I don't know. I haven't had a team that I've picked to win the title go all that far in the past few years, so that's been nice. Loon Mags, second place currently, 640 points. Top 12% in the world. Max score of 1,200. We're struggling a little bit here in that he's got Kentucky in the final, so he's losing a little bit of a max score over me on that one. But again, none of it matters if UConn wins the title, because he'll be getting those points that I will not be getting. The Arizona loss hurt Loon Mags substantially, as he's got them in the Final Four. Had them beating Baylor to get there, so Clemson's just ruining his entire life. But had Tennessee against Purdue. Or had Tennessee over Gonzaga, so losing out on down the Purdue Boilermakers there. And had Houston beating Duke. So lost out there as well. But like I said, his champ is still all up in there, and he will be cutting down the Loon HQ nets if UConn is cutting down the national title nets. Loon Mush is in third place currently. And by the way, the remaining four Loons are all out, and they're all pretty much exactly where they're going to be in terms of switching places. They've all lost their champion. Loon Mush, who had picked Creighton to win it all, he's got 520 points. He's in the 42nd percentile, so just a little bit below average right now. Had Creighton over Kentucky in one Final Four matchup and Connecticut over UNC in the other. Had Creighton beating UConn again in the title game. Obviously that won't be happening because they didn't make it there. I respect the Purdue love, because he's got them at least in the Elite Eight, but losing to Creighton, obviously. We talked about it last pod, but New Mexico into the Elite Eight was a problem from the beginning for a Loon Mush, and obviously Kentucky losing was a problem too, as it was for most of us. Yeah. We just trusted the Blue Jays, and the Blue Jays weren't to be trusted, and that's, you know, gonna end up. Honestly, Loon Mush's bracket's like pretty solid. Sometimes your like champion just loses, and then you're kind of fucked. But pretty solid bracket overall. had Houston beating Wisconsin, which would have looked a lot better without the injuries, so got a little bit unlucky there. Slim Loon, similarly, 450 points, 26th percentile, so very, very poor here. He's a possibility for 80 more points, and that is if who would need to win? If Purdue wins and goes to the Final Four, my guy has Purdue in the Final Four. One of his Final Four matchups was Arizona over Auburn, had Auburn beating UConn, which obviously isn't happening. They lost in the first round, so that was tough. Just like sometimes you, like I don't want to be mean to the guy, but like you pick Kentucky to win the title, you pick Auburn to be in the Final Four, they both lose in the first round. That's tough. That's tough. I'm not gonna lie, that's tough. just like a really sort of really bad bracket from the very beginning, if I'm not gonna lie. Had JMU in the Elite Eight. They didn't get there. They lost in the first round too. Speaking of bad brackets, we got Loon Beast's entry here. 420 points, 21 percentile, not good. Final Four was Arizona over Auburn. And Texas is in the Final Four out of the Midwest. They lost in the second round. Arizona losing was obviously a huge blow because had him in the title. Clemson's just kind of like ruining everybody's day, essentially. Yeah, like I'm kind of looking for one thing and be like, Loon Beast actually got this one really, really right, but I'm not really finding it. He doesn't have a single. He doesn't have a single. Didn't get one Sweet 16 game right. He was 0 out of 32 on the Sweet 16, so he was, Loon Beast was done after two rounds. Didn't get one Sweet. He went. Oh, wait, this is kind of funny. He, I mean, 0 for 8, obviously, in the Sweet 16 games, but had the chance of, like, getting at least some of them right. None of them went well. That's tough. Somehow not the worst, though. Final team in Road to the Final Loon is Loon Schmidt. He is ranked 27.2 millionth, or 22.7 millionth, sorry for the slander. Bottom 15% in the entire world. And a lot of people filled this out on based on colors and shit. Again, not a single point in the Sweet 16 or beyond, and or even worse, round of 64 compared to Loon Beast. Final four teams were all out relatively immediately. I mean, most of them lost in the Sweet 16, to be fair, but yeah. Just never really got off the ground. He's got 370 points. There it is. Really tough competition this year for the boys. Intern Allen currently leading. Loon Meigs with a chance. Loon Meigs probably going to win because of the odds of UConn winning versus Purdue winning. We essentially each have a future on those two teams. I think if neither of those two teams win, and it's like some random team like, you know, I don't know, Alabama or Clemson or whatever, I think I'm more likely to win that type of shit. Just in terms of how many points I have now versus how many he has. But again, we can look up the odds for like to win the title, and I think, you know, it's going to be pretty heavily favored in UConn. Obviously, a lot of that right now is because they're around ahead of Purdue and some of the other teams, but right now UConn is -210 to win. I expected it to be pretty heavily like clear that they were the favorite. I did not expect them to be the odds-on favorite necessarily. Again, a lot of that is because they're a round ahead of every other team at this point. So probabilistically, then they already have one game they don't have to win compared to the other ones. But yeah, that's pretty crazy. Still probably is going to be like even money for them to win the title. Anyway, that's the March Madness talk. Let's get on to the Twins. Baseball started. Opening day. I'm actually going to the Marlins game tomorrow for work, which is going to be sick. They play the Pirates, who are not good, but O'Neill Cruz is kind of fire, so maybe he'll do something cool. Going to a baseball game on Easter by yourself, maybe not the move, but I'm going to be there. It'll be cool. You know, I'll sing in church in the morning and all that shit too, so I'll do that part. Twins are 2-0 to start. You know, good, pretty, not necessarily easy dubs, but, you know, some late drama in today's game. Excuse me. But ended up being not that close on the scoreline. I believe it was both of them were three point games. Jesus Christ, 3-run games. It was 5-1 today, and 4-1 on Thursday, I believe. Yes. Obviously, the big thing is Royce Lewis got hurt in the first game. Running the bases, he had a pump earlier in the game to sort of start off the scoring for us in that first inning. But then, I don't remember what inning it was, injured running the bases. They're calling it a severe quad strain. It's not an injury I'm necessarily familiar with, but that he's going to be out for like up to a month. It's obviously not great for this season. If you were like to hang, if you were to like decorate the stadium with like pictures of the team's best players, I think two of them are injured until like mid-April. Wait, not mid-April. Mid-April at the earliest, maybe late April, in Yoan Duran and Royce Lewis. Those might be the two top, like, five popular, most exciting players in the Twins, and they're both injured until a month into the season. So that's not great. You obviously can't, like, draw a lot of conclusions on two games, especially two games against the Royals, who aren't very good. But it seems like, if only because the rest of the division isn't very good, that there's a bit of a room to grow into this season a little bit. Maybe they go somewhere slightly above 500 for the first month, and then they, you know, get some guys back and play a little bit better from then on. Hopefully that type of thing is what happens here instead of anything resembling wheels falling off. But I just think, like, the Chicago White Sox are going to be truly very bad this year. The Detroit Tigers are going to be almost as bad, and the Royals might be almost as bad as them. So to get to play those three teams as much as you do in Major League Baseball scheduling is going to be nice. The Indians have a bit of a – they're not called the Indians anymore. I'm getting canceled for that one. The Guardians have just a horrible offense, but a very, very good pitching staff. So they're going to be kind of how they usually are. But anyway, because that's the division we play in, we can kind of like, I don't want to say like, coast our way through a month and get guys healthy and then kind of just go from there. But that's kind of what we can do. I think, at least at this point, with what we've seen or what we're expecting to see. Other injury news, Anthony DeSclafani is going to be out for the season. thank you for your contributions to the Twins. Anthony DeSclafani, you will never probably pitch for us ever, because I think it was a one-year deal, and it's a season-ending injury, and that's cool. It's UCL-related. Not Tommy John, I don't think. But I talked about it last week that it might be Tommy John. I think they're not doing Tommy John, but it's something similar that's going to take forever. I didn't look into it very deeply because he's not really a very important piece to the team. But I guess some positives from the first two games, other than obviously two wins, is positive. But Lopez and Pablo Lopez, is it Pablo? See, this is he's the best pitcher on the Twins. And I have been talking about him on this pod, you know, since the middle of last season. And I don't know which Lopez it is. It is Pablo Lopez. Because we had a Jose Lopez, we had a Jorge Lopez, and we had a Pablo Lopez all at the same time. Pablo Lopez. That's the one. Anyway, he was very good in his debut. One earned in four innings. Four hits, seven Ks, you know, just kind of exactly how you draw it up. To start the year. Gave up a pump, you know, one bad pitch type of thing. Other than that, scattered three hits around that meant nothing. Got just enough run support. Two ninth inning runs and got a dub. Cole Reagans is actually very good young pitcher for the Royals. So, do we love not getting a lot of runs against him? No, but I think it's fine. Jacks with the save, he'll get probably quite a few of those probably early season. Then Joe Ryan pitched well again today. Very similar game, 5-1. Joe Ryan allowed none of those runs, I believe. No, he did allow the last one in the sixth inning. He pitched 5 1/3, allowed one run. Walked one, only three hits and five Ks. And then we ended up tying it up in the eighth and then four in the ninth to both take the lead and then kind of put the game away all at once. Went on quite a bit of a rally there. Two Buxton doubles in this game, and Correa got involved in the first game too. So the guys that we're expecting to be sort of the big pieces in this team, or at least we were last year, they seem to be involved early. Obviously, again, it's just two games, so we'll see. But other than the injury to Royce Lewis, which obviously is very annoying because, you know, he's got a bit of a history with that now too, all good things in the Twins department. They will be finishing the series, I believe, tomorrow in Kansas City before going to... They have a day off, I think. And then go to Milwaukee. Tomorrow, let's see who we got on the bump. Bailey Ober versus Brady Singer. Both two young pitchers. Everybody on the Royals is young, by the way. Everybody on the Royals, like, their entire team right now, like, was on the Omaha Storm Chasers 2 years ago when I was covering all the minor league teams. I used to watch them play the St. Paul Saints all the fucking time, and they killed us. So, like, Bobby Witt, Vinny Pasquantino, MJ Melendez, I think Brady Singer, I think maybe even Cole Reagans were, like, all on that team at the same time, and they were, like, the best team in AAA at the time. So now I think that they're all going to be good in the majors, and they all aren't. But anyway, that's the Twins. Early season. Good to have baseball back. Watched a little bit today. Watched a little bit Thursday, opening day. Oh, I was telling the loons about this in the group chat. The fact that baseball, on a day when the Sweet 16 is playing, the Sweet 16 starts at like 6 p.m., right, and goes until like fucking midnight Eastern, or later. The fact that baseball doesn't start their games until 2 hours before that, and then like half their games are completely covered up by the NCAA tournament, is insane. There should on opening day absolutely be day baseball. Like, there's no, like, you need a 12 o'clock game. You need a 1:10 start. Like, how is there not that happening? At least a couple places across the country. Like, I'm a big fan of day sports as it is, because as of right now, I don't have a 9-to-5 job. That will change soon, very likely. But when you don't have a 9-to-5 job and you, or you're doing a little bit of work at home, maybe you're working remote and you can have something on in the background, having day sports is just incredible. So any opportunity to have it is like, you should absolutely take it. But especially opening day, like, every team in the league is playing. They don't all need to play at 4:10 p.m. Eastern. Like, the fact that there wasn't a 1:10 start isn't, like, it's so stupid. I remember watching, and there used to, like, be 1:10 starts, right? Like, there used to be, I remember watching in Mr. McGlynn's Tools for Schools class, in Goose Mr. McGlynn's Tools for Schools class, in seventh grade. I remember watching, he would have opening day on, and it would be, like, middle of the day, and there's baseball on. So I know it happened. I remember coming home from school with Goose Dirty, and there'd be, like, games happening when we come home from school at, like, 3 o'clock. So, like, and the games that were, like, halfway done at that point. So there must be, like, it must have used to have been a thing. I don't know why it's not a thing this year. Anyway. Baseball, it's a thing. It's back. Talk about the Wolves quickly. We're fucking ripping right now. 3-0 since the last pod. Beat the Warriors, beat the Pistons, who nobody cares about. They're terrible. But then also beat the Nuggets. All three pretty convincing wins. I guess the Warriors game was pretty close. But 114 to 110 against the Warriors. Dominated the second half like we've been doing ever since Cat got out. So there's a little bit, like, at a certain point, it's like a not just a coincidence or not just them trying really hard, and maybe Cat sort of inefficiencies on, I don't even want to say that because I don't know if it's true, but something about the way the offense needs to run when Cat is on the floor is maybe not as conducive to holding leads. And that being really, really guard dominant, it helps with that. I don't know. That's very half-baked, and I don't even want to say it necessarily because I'm not sure I believe it. But again, dominated the second half. Ant with 23, 8, and 6. That's 8 assists and 6 rebounds, I believe. I have that in my notes, so I don't know for sure. But Nas with 20 and 12, 6 of 8 from 3. The three-point ball was the way that the Wolves won this game. Shot over 50% from three, which is nuts, and made 21. I think they were 21 of 40, which is just, I mean, they did have like 16 turnovers, which isn't great. The fact that they only scored 114 points on 21 made threes is kind of crazy, but give the Warriors a dose of their own medicine, if you will. 21 made threes. Rudy was 17 and 12. Draymond did not leave this game early, which is seems to be rare for him these days. I don't think this is the first meeting of Rudy and Draymond since Draymond was like an annoying little bitch and like choked him like a 4-year-old for no reason. I don't think it's the first game since that happened. I really don't. By the way, Alabama, you heard it here first, is going to the Final Four. You almost surely did not hear that here first because it's going to come out tomorrow. But they just clinched in my time. don't think this is the first time that Rudy and Draymond have seen each other since the choking incident. But it might be just because Draymond was gone. I don't think so. Anyway, he didn't leave the game early, so that's, you know, credit to him for that. Doesn't really happen often anymore. Yeah, the Warriors are a playing team and they're boring, but ESPN seems to want to put them on TV all the time. But we beat them anyway. Next game, killed the Pistons 106-91 for our 50th win of the year. 50 wins is, hadn't been like 18 years since that happened or something like that. It's very possible still to get 50, 60 wins. We'd have to win out because I think there's 9 games left in the season. but we passed the over for wins on the season a while ago. It's going to be 56, 57 wins, 55 wins, somewhere in there, for the regular season, which is going to be cool. By the way, Nate Oates' daughter. Yeah, I probably shouldn't have said that. She might be very young. If Nate Oates' daughter is not way too young, she's very attractive. Anyway, Nas with 20 and 10, 21 and 10. McDaniels had 20 and only had like 9. Some games he just like doesn't score. I don't know what it is. Just he's not looking for his own, or he misses a couple early and then just decides to facilitate a little bit more from there. McDaniels had 20. Always nice when he's filling out offensively. Honestly, not a lot to say. It's the Pistons. They're a bad team. Should be beating them by 15. Exactly what we did. Take care of business against a bad team. Cade Cunningham at 32 out of 91. It's kind of crazy. He's like the only player on that team, I swear. But then just last night, big win over the Nuggets. And a relatively convincing win, too. 111-98. Kept that well-oiled offensive machine under 100 points. Ant, Conley, and Rudy all filling in with over 20 points. McDaniels had 17 himself. Nas was a bit down, or not down, but just not as big of a scoring game for him. all kind of filling in there. Jokic had 32, but only 5 assists, and it seems like they've found a little bit of something here, and it happened in the game either last week or a week and a half ago, whatever it was, when they lost, Wolves lost by 3, Ant missed the game winner, but was very much in that game, kind of had it figured out. Jokic is maybe most dangerous passing the basketball, and so if we just kind of let him score, use elite perimeter defense to sort of shut down everybody else. The Nuggets did not shoot the ball well from the perimeter in this game, to a tune of like 28%, right? So like, we only shot it from 32% from three, you know, but there is kind of a big difference in those 4%. 28% is very inefficient from three. And you don't, if a guy was shooting 28% from three, you'd be like, don't shoot it. So to keep a team as a whole to that number is pretty impressive. I mean, Jokic had 32, 10, and 5. It's hard to say that that's a bad game, but that's 10 rebounds and 5 assists, by the way. It's hard to say that that's a bad game, but to the extent of what he can do, that almost like feels like we successfully limited him. Nobody else was over 14 points. Jamal Murray is hurt, so like there's that. And maybe that's a big difference. And maybe that's all the difference is. But if you're losing Jamal Murray and we're missing Cat, then you know it's kind of tit for tat in a bunch of ways, I think. But that is two now losses in a row for Denver at home. Neither of them were on a back-to-back. Wolves are now tied for first with Oklahoma City. So after the Cat injury, I came on this podcast and essentially buried the Wolves' chances for the one seed. I said, we're not going to get it. We're going to be a 3 or 4 seed. Hopefully we can hang in enough to get a good playoff matchup, blah, blah, blah. We're now 9 games away from the end of the season to when those playoff matchups are obviously set. And we're tied for the one seed. We're playing as well as we have all year. It might be, 5, 6 game winning streak at this point. And like 8 of 9 or 9 of 10 for the past, 2, 3 weeks. And not just against bad teams either, beating some good teams here as well. Ant has stepped up scoring when he needs to. Was not as much this past week, but Naz Reid has been much more involved scoring the basketball, as we kind of always knew he could be, but in a starting role. Conley has been scoring a lot in games here and there. McDaniels has been making shots. Everybody's just kind of be stepping up on the offensive end in a way that I didn't necessarily expect to see. So that's been nice. Like I said, we'll see. Scheduled to finish the year again, 9 more games. I think we play the Suns twice. We play the Nuggets again. But then other than that, it's a lot of average to bad teams. Let me just check that real quick. Play the Bulls. Play the... I think I remember the Bulls. Where am I looking here? Minnesota. Bulls, who are just below 500 right now. Rockets, who are just above. Raptors, who are bad, really bad. Then Suns, Lakers, Wizards, who are horrible. Nuggets, Hawks, who are bad. And Suns again to end the year. So if we like our chances to end up, you know, if we're not the 1 seed, we'll be the 2 seed. If somehow we're not the 2 seed, we'll be the 3 seed, and it'll be what it is. Right now, we'd be looking at playing. So obviously, the winner of the play-in, but it's Phoenix, Sacramento, LA, and Golden State in the play-in right now. Feel comfortable beating any of those teams. Hopefully, if we play the way we can in the playoffs, which, you know, it's a Minnesota sports team, so we never know if that's for sure going to happen. But that's what it is. That's the Wolves stuff. I'm going to get to a real quick pregame or postgame. I don't know why I said pregame. Alan Pre. So, as many of you know, I used to be quite an enthusiast of Mountain Dew, right? My freshman year of college, I was probably pounding 3 Dews a day, 3 Dew Heavies a day. Because my dining hall just had Dew Heavy on tap, in the soda machine, and so I just, you know, have breakfast after class, go to dining hall for lunch, Dew Heavy with my in my little dining hall cup, maybe go up and get a refill if I need to, go home to either go or go to class again, whatever, eventually go home, you know, like 3 p.m. to do homework. Dew Heavy out of my fridge, and then go back for dinner around 6:37. Dew Heavy out of the tap. I was having 3 Dew Heavies a day. It was got to be a bit, you know, a bit of a problem where I wasn't sleeping as much as I should have, and caffeine really dries out your voice, and I. You know, was making the switch to becoming a singing major at the time and blah, blah, blah. So long story short, I quit Dew since freshman year until basically now. I haven't really quit Dew, but like also just like didn't really drink any caffeine at all. Like I don't drink coffee, don't like tea. We'd only have Dews if I went to Taco Bell to get Baja Blast, because you just can't pass that up. Or like on a road trip, or like a day where I'm flying a bunch and it's just gonna like suck and I'm just gonna want to stay awake. On a road trip to stay awake, on a flight just to like, I don't know, just not hate my life as much. I don't know. With as busy as my schedule has been recently, I have to admit that I'm back on the Dew. Been ripping it almost daily. Some days not, but a full bottle, like 16-ounce bottle. Middle afternoon, just to get me through. And it's been awesome. I mean, Dew Heavy tastes so good. It tastes so good. I don't even think, like, obviously the caffeine, the effect of the caffeine is what it is. But when I'm like, wow, I want to Dew right now, it's not like, I'm not like looking for a caffeine jolt. I'm looking for like the taste. I'm just like, wow, I really wanted to like taste that Dew right now. Same thing, like every day I came home from high school, we would either go to Taco Bell or I'd get a Dew out of the fridge when I got home, you know. So same thing, almost the exact same time, like 3:30,
I'm ripping a do heavy. Like, that's, it's happening. So I'm back, on the do heavy. We'll see if that continues. Didn't have one today, actually. Kind of a weekend day, so not as much going on. Probably back maybe tomorrow. We'll see. Probably not. Maybe. Definitely Monday. Back on the do. That's the podcast. A mountain emoji. See ya.